Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the Q3 FY18 earnings conference call of Cyient Limited, hosted by Edelweiss Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss Securities Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Ali. Good evening to everyone. On behalf of Edelweiss, let me welcome you to the Cyient Q3 FY18 earnings call. We have with us the senior management of Cyient, headed by Mr. B.V.R. Mohan Reddy, along with other senior members of the management team. Without further ado, I will hand over the call to Mr. Ajay Aggarwal to start the proceedings. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandeep. This is Ajay Aggarwal here. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and good day to any people from outside of India. Welcome to Cyient Limited's earnings call for the Q3 of financial year 2018, ended December 31, 2017. Present with me on this call are our Executive Chairman, Mr. Mohan Reddy, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Krishna Bodanapu. Before we begin, I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risk and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available on our investor update, which has been emailed to you and is also posted in our corporate website. Before I hand over to Mr. Mohan Reddy to make his brief overview, I would just like to mention that, you know, we have slightly changed the process in terms of release of results. We are just trying to make sure that everybody has a good understanding of the results before markets start reacting. So we take the results to the board, then we announce it to the before by the time the markets close, we announce it, and then we provide at least 1 hour, 1.5 hour for everybody to study and come prepared for the earnings call. So going forward, we use this process because we have seen that earlier, looking at the summary without going in details, there have been some confusions in the past. This is the practice we follow. Today, we had a consideration of interim dividend also. Because of that, I know you have got maybe less than 1 hour today to study the results, but going forward, we'll make sure you get 1.5 hour to study the numbers. With that, I hand over to Mr. Mohan Reddy to give a brief overview of the company's performance for the quarter.
Thank you, Ajay. Good evening to all of you, ladies and gentlemen. I once again welcome you all to this conference call. Q3 financial year 2018 was in line with our expectations, both on revenue as well as margins. We saw the highest ever quarterly revenue of $152 million, with a strong quarter-on-quarter growth of 1.3% and a year-on-year growth of 11.9% in US dollar terms, despite the lower working days. For our services business, which is our core, the revenue stood at $139.9 million, which again, a highest ever, with a robust quarter-on-quarter growth of 4.2% in US dollar terms and a 4.4% in constant currency terms, and a year-on-year of 15.6% in US dollar terms. The growth in our services business is more broad-based, with six out of the eight business units which grew at double digits year-on-year. Operating margin for the quarter sustained at 14.6%, despite the headwinds of higher paydays. The expansion is 116 basis points year-on-year. Operating profit for the quarter stood at Indian rupees 1,431 million, or it's 143.1 crores, which is also the highest ever, with a quarter-on-quarter growth of 1.6% and a year-on-year growth of 16.5%. Net profit for the quarter stood at rupees 878 million, or it is 87.8 crores. There has been one-off event, the loss of IAS on two grounds. 2 months of operating losses due to Hurricane Puerto Rico, and some marginal loss on divestment that Ajay will explain in a moment. Adjusting for the one-offs, the normalized profit for the quarter would stand at 1,088 million rupees or 108.8 crore rupees, implying an year-on-year growth of 15.5%. Cash and cash equivalent stood at 1,077 crores or US$168 million, which is again highest ever. Free cash flow generation for the quarter stands at 67% of EBITDA, and that's at 113.6 crores. Adding the proceeds of IAS divestment, the free cash flow stands at 174 crores for the quarter. Taking feedback from the investors, company declared a second interim dividend of rupees 4 per share, which is in line with our revised dividend policy of payout of 40% from the current payout of 30%, barring unusual situations. As a part of the ongoing CSR initiatives, we continue to support 25 government schools, supporting in, the education for the underprivileged children. As a part of our initiative to increase IT literacy, we've also added one more science digital center, taking the total to 56. Science Foundation launched 2 smart classes, the first of such government schools in the Telangana state. Science obtained the ICRA rating of CGR 2+ for corporate governance practices of the company. We won Pratt & Whitney, what they call it as the America Supplier Innovation Award for the fifth consecutive time, and Productivity Saving Award, second time in the last 5 years. Science won Golden Peacock Award 2017 for risk management, and recently in Singapore. Confederation of Indian Industry recognized Science as one of the most innovative organizations. On the infrastructure front, we established Aerospace Nearshore Engineering Center in Portishead, or it's called Portishead in United Kingdom. We also inaugurated the Science Defense Services offices in West Palm Beach in Florida. We expanded the Center of Excellence for a key customer with additional capacity of 75 seats, strengthening our business relationships. We also inaugurated the Global Tower Operations Center, or TOC as it's called, at Hyderabad. It's the Tower Operations Center. This IoT-enabled TOC provides 24/7 surveillance and remotely monitors all passive assets in cell towers across multiple locations around the world. On the infrastructure front, our Telstra Delivery Center in Blacktown, New South Wales, got the coveted ISO 27001 2013 certification. We won our first grid analytics project in collaboration with a recent concluded partnership. With this, I would like to hand over the call to Ajay, who will take you through the detailed financial performance for the quarter.
Ajay. Thank you, Mohan. Before I go through the numbers, I would just like to take a couple of minutes to explain one of the one-off which is there in quarter three. So as such, we have delivered a very robust profit growth. If you see year-on-year, our profit growth is about 16%. We are giving for the first 9 months a double-digit growth on profit. But if you look at the reported number, there is a one-off, and we have to read the reported numbers with this one-off. So in the last quarter, we had already disclosed that we have this 49% joint venture with Pratt & Whitney, and we had already decided that we will be divesting this 49%. I think the transaction has been consummated in this quarter, exactly in line with what we had signed off. In terms of the financial returns, I think it has been a very handsome return We got an IRR of more than 50% on this original investment that we made in 2003. And over a period of time, we got more than $20 million from the original investment of $250,000. In terms of how it impacts the quarter, we have got on a gross basis about $11 million. On net basis, net of tax, $9 million. That's how you see we have the highest ever cash of $167 million. Obviously, there has been a handsome operating cash flow also that has been generated. In terms of the income statement, I think the overall impact is about $3.5 million. There are two things. Before closing, since there was a hurricane, as Chairman mentioned, the losses till that point of time are about $3.15 million. And the loss on sale, if you net of tax, I think more or less is at a neutral level. So when you look at this profit number, I would request you to please look at these details, and they should be helpful in reading the statements. So coming to the revenue, I think this has been a good quarter with $152 million of growth. In constant currency, we have grown in services business 4.4%. All of us know we have a lot of headwinds that typically come in quarter three. Despite that, I think 4.4% constant currency growth and 4.2% in dollar terms has been very good growth. If you look at year-on-year growth, all the businesses, I think, are growing positively in double-digit, right from aerospace, transportation, communication, INR, semiconductor, transportation, UNG. DLM, where we are, we had a push-out of some of the revenue to the next year, is also on track, and Krishna will talk more about it. But I can assure you that, you know, with the growth in quarter four, we are absolutely on track on DLM. If you look at the geography-wise, I think the growth is coming from all sides. America has grown 10%, Europe 16%, and Asia-Pacific 10%. In terms of the income statement, I would say the most gratifying factor is all of you know that because of the mismatch between the bill days and the pay days, we do get a headwind on the operating margin in quarter three typically. So this time we had a headwind of about 130 basis points, but we had a lot of improvements in utilization, in other operating parameters. Because of that, we have been able to sustain the margin at 14.6% levels. In the services business, our margin is moving in the right direction, where we are looking at a number closer to 16% in the services business. For a quarter three, I think that's one of the best performance. If you look at year on year also, our margin is improving. Most of it is coming from gross profit improvement, and the absorption of SG&A is also helping us. In terms of profit after tax, you know, there are two items. One is ISI impact, and another is in terms of the other income, if you see, both in terms of the treasury income as well as the income that we have made on the forward contracts. I think we are in positive. Only the restatement of the effects related items, last quarter it was about, I think I'll show in the next slide, about plus 9 crores. This time it is about minus 5 crores. So that swing of 14 crores makes a lot of impact. So overall, if you see on taking off the one-off, we have a 16% growth impact year-on-year and a degrowth of 2.4% quarter-on-quarter. This is all because of that 14 crore swing. If you take that out, the impact of that is itself is about 12%. We would have delivered about 10%. Had the rupee stayed at 64 and not moved to 63 between 30th September and 31st December, just for the purpose of balance sheet restatement, we would have shown a quarter-on-quarter growth of about 10%. ETR, you would see that the reported number is much better at 22.4%, but I would say because of the tax adjustment on ISI and also the adjustment for the deferred tax because of the U.S., our like-to-like excluding one-off number is 27.9. How to read the tax going forward? We are still studying the impact of the U.S. Tax rate. Our estimate is our ETR on a steady state should go down by about 1%, but some of the further impacts are still being studied, and we continue to work on the SEZ ramp-ups, which could further reduce the tax rate in coming years. As we saw, we have the highest cash position of about 1,077 crore or $167 million. The cash conversion is tracking very nicely at 67%. Even if you look at the full year, we are at about 50%. The good thing is DLM also, there's a lot of focus on cash generation, and while they have broken even on the operating profit, I think on cash also we have generated positive free cash flow. So all this has led to a cash generation of 1136 million INR, and you add the ISI, then the overall addition is 1749 million or 174 crores. And if you look at the bridge at the bottom, we are explaining where we have spent. The only takeaway is we have spent money on the dividends that were declared last quarter, and we have spent another 21 crore on long-term investments, which includes some investments in IP. In terms of the first, the other income, as I explained, while on face of it, you will see that our other income quarter on quarter has moved from 406 to 273. You can see that if you take off the impact of unrealized FX loss gain, that movement of 93 to minus 50, which is a swing of about 14 crore, I think we are doing well on realized forward contracts as well as on the treasury income. There is no change in the FX policy. If you look at our total coverage, it's at about $123 million. We continue to have in the next quarter and coming period some advantage over the current spot rate, which translates at current spot rates to a gain of about $5.24 million. And you can see at the bottom the arbitrage in the rate. So if you look at dollar rate, for example, our forward position is at about 67.5, whereas the current spot is at about 64. With this, I'll hand over to Krishna.
Okay. Thank you, Ajay. So, like always, we'll start with the current investment pipeline and focus areas. In terms of M&A, there are two active LOIs in place, one of which is a company called BNF that we had talked about previously. You may recall we announced the acquisition of a specialist tool maker in the U.S. It's taken some time to close because we needed something called the CFIUS approval, which is given by the Department of Treasury in the U.S. because the company also does defense-related work. We got the CFIUS approval a few days or a few weeks ago, and we will close this very shortly. And there's a few other things in terms of corporate investments, et cetera, which are going on. I will just leave the active pursuits. We've put that there to make sure that we're being transparent and articulating our requirements proactively. So nothing changes there. We are focused on various businesses in various areas, and we'll continue to be focused on that going forward. In terms of the industry outlook, I'll spend a few minutes on this. The aerospace and defense industry is quite strong. While there are challenges, like I've been saying, on the commercial aerospace, the defense is starting to pick up. We also, like Chairman said, we inaugurated the office in West Palm Beach, Florida, which actually does a lot of work for defense-related projects. There's already about 150 people there, and we're seeing some very, very good growth over there. We believe that the defense market is coming up, and we're well-positioned both because of the organic investments, and also once BNF comes into fold, we will see that being quite helpful to how our overall aerospace and defense business will grow. There's also areas like avionics, which is essentially aerospace electronics, aftermarkets, manufacturing, engineering, which are all helping with this growth. The communication industry, obviously, as you know, cuts across a number of industries in the sense that it's an enabler for a lot of disruption that's happening across multiple industries. We're seeing some good opportunities around fiber deployment, which essentially helps high-speed broadband connections. If you look at the slide that Ajay presented, communications was one of our star performers, and we see that momentum to be continuing. The utilities and geospatial industry also, there are some very good opportunities in this industry because there are new technologies like advanced metering, smart meters, et cetera. While the sort of the historic skills around transmission and distribution and network design are stable, where we're seeing some very good growth opportunities is under areas like software and analytics. We're seeing grid management, things that really help collect data, collate data, and then do analysis with the data. On rail transportation, we're seeing strong growth both in rolling stock, which is the train itself, and the signaling. The long-term outlook is quite positive. I want to say that we have also signed up with another new OEM, which is one of the largest OEMs in the world. And with this, all the five large OEMs in rail are our customers, and not just tactical customers, but quite strategic in terms of how we work with them. The industrial energy and natural resources, that market still is under a little bit of stress. We're not seeing the spend in capital coming back. CapEx still tends to be at a premium. But having said that, though, there are a lot of opportunities like UNG around electronics, telematics, IOE, analytics, etc. So while we do see muted growth for this year, which I've been talking about over the last couple of quarters, next year we are starting to see some good opportunities tee up. Again, not in the traditional areas, but in areas like the design-led manufacturing, analytics, connected equipment, etc. We put together a strategy for connected equipment, how we can effectively connect things together, and we're seeing some good traction because of that. The semiconductor industry has had a fantastic run this year on top of what happened last year. Between the last 2 years, growth has almost been 25%, which is a significant pickup compared to what it was a few years ago. The demand for memory chips, analog chips, are looking quite appealing at this point. There was a degrowth in this business in Q3, but that's just down to seasonality. The rest of the year outlook actually looks quite good. The medical devices industry also continues to do well. We expect a CAGR of about 5% going forward. And the major drivers of this are increasing healthcare expenditure, awareness, aging population, application of technology, etc. So there's a lot of impact on the medical device market, starting from design to manufacturing to servicing, etc. Therefore, we are quite well positioned over there. Again, there was a small degrowth because of seasonality, but we have started a number of relationships and some quite strategic with the top 10 medtech players. So we believe that's growing. And also, medical is an interesting business because there's a lot of new companies and startups. So we're also seeing some good opportunities there. BLM continues to be positive, and I'll talk about what happened this quarter, but because of a push out of one order this quarter, which we're very confident will happen in Q4, Q3 was a little bit tepid in the BLM business. But again, from a longer term perspective, comms, communications, defense, transport are all doing well. And the outlook for Q4 is actually quite strong in that business, which I will talk about here in a second. So net, putting it all together, the services business, we said double-digit growth. That will absolutely be there. It will be obviously a little bit better than just being double-digit, in the sense that it won't be 10.01%. It will be higher than that. It will be closer to 11-12% in that range is what we're looking at. Now, BLM business, I'd say 20% growth at the beginning of the year. I just want to caveat that a little bit. From a volume perspective, the 20% growth is going to happen. 20% growth is going to happen. There's just one small oversight from my part, and that is last year we were adding excise duty to the revenue, whereas this year we won't, just because of the new GST regulations and so on and so forth. So the reported revenue will look a little bit smaller. It will be more like 16% or so, because that 4% was the excise duty that we were adding last year, but not this year. And I apologize for that. Maybe that was an oversight. But keeping that caveat aside, right, the volume growth is still going to be 20%. That's the first point over there. The second point is, before you pull out your calculators, it will be 80-90% growth is what we have to do in Q4 over Q3. And I want to assure you that that is in the pipeline. You know, the orders are there. The material has come in. We've double-checked with our production schedule. The manufacturing capability that we have in Mysore can deliver about $25 to $28 million of product in any given quarter. So, you know, all that adding up together, you know, the whatever the between 80 and 90% quarter on quarter growth is what we will deliver. 20% volume growth is what we will deliver. It's just that from a reported perspective, it will look a little bit lower, so please bear with me on that one. Margin will expand by about 50 basis points, or I'll say at least 50 basis points. It will be a little bit better than 50, but anyway, at this point, it's really semantics. It will be very close to 50, let me say. But operational improvements gave us 350 bps. Utilization mix, better on-site margin, and actually that was a very important aspect because a significant portion of our business is on-site. We got some good margins because of that. The wage hike took away 150. We made about 100 basis points of investments, and obviously these are quite strategic in nature, be it through the new business accelerator or intellectual property investments, etc. There's also been a little bit of pricing pressure in various places, but that took away about 50 basis points. And that's where, you know, DLM will also end up at low single digit number for the year. So net, I want to say, you know, from where we started off the year, we are going to end up pretty close to where we started off the year. Earnings growth will be double digits, putting all this together. And before I close, I'll say, while it's too early to comment on FY19 numbers, we're still going through the budgeting and the forecasting process. As things stand, we don't see things to be very different in FY19 compared to FY18. There will be the usual ups, there will be the usual downs, but net, where I still feel very confident about where the business is headed. Specifically in DLM, some of the projects that we've been talking about that are really the long-term strategic projects are getting teed up into the pipeline, and we're quite confident that through the year some of these will come up. Obviously, at the end of April, I'll give you a much better peg on where that stands. With that, I will end here, and once again, thank you very much for your support. It's been a good quarter, especially in terms of the services business. The forecast also looks quite good for the DLM business, so NetNet will have a good Q4 as things stand.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We will take the first question from the line of Ravi Menon from Elara Securities.
Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a good quarter. Just had a couple of questions. First is, on the DLM side, we've seen a decline in the communications. So wanted to understand if that's what helped us post slightly better margins, because I see that the material manufacturing cost has come off. And should we expect that this vertical mix change in DLM will continue?
Broadly, yes, the communications business is, at least as it stands, we believe that that's not really strategic to us. So that was part of the plan. The dependence on communications will further come down next year. And we believe that because of this, we will get some better margins. Again, there's some mix issues, et cetera, but consciously we're reducing. I'd say consciously they're reducing the current mix of communications. It's just that, you know, there's some really good opportunities that are coming up which help us make much better margins. It's just the current customers won't. And we want to, you know, moderate that. I don't want to say we're not going to do that, but we're going to moderate that.
Great. And in aerospace, you know, saw that you've posted nice growth on the services side, despite top five clients not really contributing to bulk of that. So, is it a really new customer or a set of customers where you've got the growth from?
So it's a new set of customers. I think in some of the top five, we're Q3, for example, hits us quite hard in UTC because there's a lot of U.S. dependency on UTC. U.S. has obviously fewer working days, etc. So that always happens in Q3. That was expected to happen. In general, there was also a little bit of a lower Q2 there, and that just continued. But we're also seeing a lot of new customers that are coming in. It's not just one customer who's skewed those numbers. There's multiple. But we're seeing, we put in a lot of effort in aerospace over the last few years to develop a new customer. I mean, to continue to develop that pipeline of new customers, and I think that's paying off quite nicely.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone phone. And participants are requested to limit their questions to two per participant. Time permitting, you may come back in the queue for a follow-up. We have the next question from Mohit Jain from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So first is on the theme which Ravi asked on the top client concentration. So how should we read it going forward? Like, do you expect this ratio to keep coming off and growth will come from new clients? Few years back, I think we had this correlation with between top client and company growth. So do you think that can change a little bit in FY19?
I think it will change. I think there's just, also given our size at this point and, given the growth, we will have to concentrate across the value chain. I think, the growth will be quite broad-based. It just won't be in the top customers. Also, having said that, there's always going to be a bit of seasonality because if I look at, even off the top of my head, if I think of the top 20, there's nobody where there's a crisis or revenues coming off. It's just that the others are doing better. And again, it's a seasonality thing. I wouldn't read too much into it.
So if I make it just add Krishna, see, typically we have seen that our growth and the top 20 customers, not top 10, I think it's plus minus 3%, and that trend is continuing. I think aerospace is a typical case where we have got it a lot from non-top customers, including the new customers, what Krishna said. But I think overall, if you look at the top customers, they continue to have good traction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, second was on utilization. Like, where do you see this number settling down?
I think, Q3 was a good number. Q4, it will come down a little bit because we're also pushing the limits of, how we can effectively manage. So it will be, but it won't change very significantly. I think we'll be around this number. I think this quarter, which was the highest ever in terms of utilization, or at least in the, at least once we've had a complex, once the complexity of the business came in. But it won't change significantly. I mean, plus or minus 200 bits is what I believe at least will happen for the foreseeable future.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Pankaj Kapoor from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks and good quarter. Congratulations. Just a question on the reported revenue growth. Was it a surprise because, as you mentioned, and Q3 typically seasonally weak for us. So how the quarter shaped up, was it a surprise to you?
Not really. I mean, it is just that I'd say if we looked at it at the beginning of the year, it would have been a surprise because typically Q3 is like that. But during the course of the year, as the pipeline started building up, as, what basis our conversations with customers, et cetera, I'd say even at the beginning of at the end of Q2, right, what we thought internally in terms of where we would be, we were about there. Like, actually, we were slightly better than that, but we were not, it wasn't anything where we, on January 1st, we all then run to the office and, sit in front of a computer and analyze it. We pretty much knew where it was going to be, plus or minus. Again, at the beginning of the year, maybe not, but through the year, yes.
Right. And the order book addition also has been quite good. So any color you can give in terms of how this stacks up across different verticals?
I think the order book has been quite robust across all the verticals. Aerospace would be the biggest part, and that's because typically aerospace has the seasonality that Q3 is most orders. But DLM orders were low, but we're not really worried about that because there's a lot of backlog there and we are set there. So it's been quite consistent across various businesses.
Right. So with that kind of order book and the pipeline that you're seeing, you mentioned that it is too early, but FY19 is likely to shape up very similar to what FY18 could be. Wanted to understand what could be one or two, three things which could possibly drag that down. Any client-specific challenges that you foresee where you might be hitting a glass ceiling or the client might be relooking at their spending portfolio. Anything which should keep in mind while we try to extrapolate the order book into the future revenues?
See, I think, it might be a little bit too premature to talk about that because we haven't gone through a, scrub down by customer, by industry, et cetera. But again, just the fact that there's a reasonably good order book, there's a reasonably good pipeline, again, there's obviously the macroeconomic crises, et cetera, can always happen. But otherwise, in our business, I think we're looking, things are looking okay at this point to be in line with what it is last year. The usual risks are always there. There's always, while order book might be there can be cancellations, there can be regulations, where the order book comes from might create a challenge from workload, attrition. All those are there, but I don't see anything specific to derail this.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Urmil Shah from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a strong quarter. Krishna, my question was again on the DLM business. Very strong growth in Q4. Which are the segments, you think that could drive growth? And moreover, FY19 and FY20, our target of increasing the design part of the business based on the orders order pipeline, how does that look?
So I think the Q4 growth will primarily come from aerospace and defense, that's where the order backlog is. In terms of how it stacks up for the future years, I think there is a lot of design that's starting off in the pipeline. Obviously, it takes some time to get the design through to manufacture. So that's why I say these things that will tee off in DLM will happen during the year, but more likely towards the second half of the year. That's when the strategic projects will really start to kick in. But having that said, I'll say our first product that we designed has gotten a EASA, which is the European Design Authority or Certification Authority for Aerospace. We got our first EASA approval a few weeks ago. The second EASA approval will also happen imminently. I think it's going through the process. So I think the volume in design is starting to build up.
Sure, thanks. My last question was, you talked about the opportunity in the defense part. Does that look it can make aerospace and defense vertical grow at the company growth over FY19 and 20?
I think it's a little too early to comment on that. I mean, the problem with the aerospace and defense is it's binary, either it happens or it doesn't. Honestly, if it doesn't, is one thing. If it happens, it will be significantly higher than even the company average. So I would just say, I'd park that aside. I mean, I'd look at that more as an upside as things happen.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Prakash Chellam from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Congratulations on a good quarter. Just wanted to check on the DLM business. You had indicated earlier that you would be free cash flow positive, and I noticed that this quarter the DLM business is free cash flow positive. Is that something which you kind of see continuing to happen over the next few quarters going ahead?
Yeah, so if you see the challenge, I think the free cash flow has two elements. One is we had to break even at the operating profit level, which we have achieved this quarter, and I think we will continue that. And second, I think we have been working on the working capital management, and we have got a good handle on that. So I think going forward, we will, so of course, next quarter, if the volumes go up, just because of mathematics of it, there could be some working capital because we are looking at very good growth. But in general, I think we do look at both at operating profit level as well as cash flow level, we are going to be positive going forward.
Okay, great. Second question which I had was on the Australian telecom business. Do you foresee any challenges, any political uncertainties around spending in that area, or are you aware of anything which might impact your potential growth of that part of the business, please? Thank you.
I'd say, Prakash, we don't see anything derailing it, but it's not going to grow at the same pace as what it has grown. The comms business or the telecom business still has a lot of potential, but we're also seeing that happen in various parts of the world. Growth will be a little bit more broad-based going forward, not just in Australia. Also, I think there are some parts of that business that are still ramping up. There's still some parts which are ramping down because the work is done. So net-net, I'd say nothing will derail us, at least where we stand or where we fall in the value chain, because from a sort of broader political aspects, there's a number of other things that are out of our control. But from where we stand, we believe nothing will derail us. It's just the growth might be a little bit lower, but there's enough opportunities there elsewhere to make up for that.
Okay. Thank you for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Rishi Maheshwari from AXA Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. Congratulations, guys. Good quarter. Just a couple of questions. Firstly,
Rishi, you're not audible. Can you be a little loud?
Yes. Am I audible now?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Just to understand, in your conversations that you've recently had with the client, with the wins that you've had, is there any conversations on pricing increase that you've engaged in? Or I understand that when you go into the future, are we also looking at, because of the change in the mix of the business, we would naturally look at the change in pricing for the positive trajectory?
So I think from a pure pricing increase perspective, from an hourly rate type of pricing increase, that's just not going to happen. I don't really see that happening in general. I mean, there's always going to be places where that will happen. So I think the smart way that we can get our price increases is really by packaging it as a project where we have end-to-end responsibility or more comprehensive responsibility. There we're seeing some better luck where we can package it as an outcome-based or a risk-reward kind of a project. Excuse me. That's where we're seeing some better opportunities to get better pricing. But purely from a hourly rate perspective, I would be very surprised if we see price increases. We've seen it in some places, having said that, like especially some of the on-site business, et cetera, where we were delivering some good value, but we weren't getting the price increases. We weren't seeing it. So I'd say, but the opportunities to do clever things at this point, that is risk reward and outcome-based pricing, are significantly higher, especially if you have the competence and the confidence.
Sure, sure. The second question was to understand the Make in India opportunity, the size of that, or anything that you can share with us on the offset opportunity now that, the first airlines also launched. So there will be clear spending on the avionics within India as well. We seem to be rightly placed for benefiting out of that trend. If we can have your views on the same.
So I think it's one of those things where the opportunity is huge, but we wouldn't count our chickens before they rooster hatch. Sorry, and nothing has hatched so far, honestly. So I think the opportunity is there. We will invest into the opportunity. But we're also taking a pragmatic view of that investment. That is, we're writing off those investments to make sure that, we're pragmatically investing in those things. We are being very careful on how much we invest. At the same time, we're not expecting some huge numbers to come in immediately. So if it happens, it happens. It's icing on the cake. But at this point, I would still look at that as the bluebird or the icing on the cake or whatever the right way of putting it is. I wouldn't bake that into the business plan. The operations, there were operating team on it, all those expenses are being written off, et cetera. So it's really a bonus. Hopefully it's the Diwali bonus, but it's a bonus.
Sure, thanks. My next set of questions would be on understanding your margins. In the last con call, you've elaborated in terms of the various levers that you've had, SG&A being very high. There've been also utilization, which you had a chance to improve, which you've done, and on-site offshore. While you've stepped on the pedal, it seems that there's just one thing which I think is extremely important, is that you've got a really long tail of less than $1 million client, which could be operationally heavy and therefore would not be as remunerative as possible. Do you think that's an area of opportunity where pruning down some of those which are not remunerative could also give you a margin kicker, while at the same point in time concentrating your energies on some of the key clients?
Absolutely. That's something that we've been doing, actually. We have cut down a number of clients in the long tail, especially we do an XY on what is the size of the client and what is the margin that we get out of them, especially low margin, low, small accounts. Most of them have been pruned. Obviously, when we start getting into trouble, our low margin but large customers, that's when we get into trouble, because that's, the weightage is quite significant. We've started to prune some of those, but the size means that usually they are, there's some dependency on it. So we're looking at that and we'll continue to do that. Actually, that's a metric that we review every month in terms of how many low margin customers and how long is the tail.
Thank
Sorry, from a pure margin kick, I'm not sure how much we can comment on it at this point.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind the participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ashiyanan from Allegro Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, hi. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. The first question was on aerospace. You made a comment on certain challenges you're facing on commercial aerospace. Could you just highlight what these are?
So, the design in commercial aerospace has come down quite a bit because a lot of the programs that have been designed over the last 10 years, be it the 787, the 350, the 320neo, the 737 MAX, all those programs, the C-Series from Bombardier, the ERJ from Embraer, etc., those programs, the design is done, they're going into manufacturing. So from a commercial aerospace perspective, design in commercial aerospace has been coming down for the last few years, and it's stabilized, but it won't increase at least for the foreseeable future. Where the opportunity is, though, is if you look at this sort of continuum, the design is done, now things are going into manufacturing. Leave the actual physical manufacturing, but there's a number of tasks that have to be performed, which are engineering related, to which I need to support manufacturing. That's where there's a huge opportunity. Similarly, once they've been manufactured, they start flying. There's a lot of things that have to be done to support the aftermarket, the repairs, the MRO, all that good stuff. So there, again, there's a lot of engineering tasks. So my point was the design, new design or new products in commercial aerospace has come down, which has happened over the last few years, and that's sort of something we just have to deal with over the last few years. But the support of manufacturing and aftermarkets has gone up significantly.
Okay, excellent. You also mentioned that there's some interest, there is some interesting opportunities around defense. What proportion of our aerospace revenues would currently come from defense?
See, right now it's quite small. I think there's some less than 5% is what defense is at this point. And again, at this point, the way we're looking at it is there are interesting opportunities. We have competence. We'll focus on them, but we'll consider it a bonus.
Okay, sure. Excellent. And just lastly, in terms of DLM, if I look at, say, DLM's margins 2 or 3 years down the line, what level of margins could we, say, be targeting from slightly medium to longer term perspective?
I mean, 10% is what we've stated as the steady state margin, and that would happen in the next 2 to 3 years at an operating level. But very quickly, I'll say, while that in isolation is 10%, there's a big dependency on design, because the whole idea of DLM is design-led manufacturing. So the design margins would be much better. So, you know, once you start adding the design margins, which will be more in the 20% range to the manufacturing margins, now you're starting to come more to the, you know, the 12-13% operating margin level. But what the interesting part is, then the volume will be significantly higher. So that's the play that we're going after. Design is a better margin. It has to be design-led manufacturing, and volume and the market share will be significantly higher.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Sagar Lele from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. Krishna, just wanted to understand, in the DLM business, are you getting any material orders yet from Cyient's key customers? You were initially targeting them in order to cross-sell a lot of the RankSense service offerings. I understand the sales cycle is a little long, but anything materializing on that front?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got some really good orders. It just takes time to materialize, also from the perspective of you have to do the design first, you have to do the... It's basically design qualification, new product introduction, prototype, certification, volume production. So, you know, we are in the early stage for some really good opportunities. Again, you know, in 19, we should start seeing this move through the that value chain in FY19.
Great. Also, on the European business, you've been seeing some really good growth there. Which verticals would this really overlap with? Is it more the transportation overlap that's causing this growth?
So it's transportation, aerospace, and defense. There should be also some utilities and geospatial. These are the three businesses that would do this.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Mayank Babla from Dalal & Broacha. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Congratulations on a great set of numbers. I just wanted to understand from you, as far as the geospatial segment is concerned, with Google Maps coming in aggressively and our top client being TomTom in geospatial, what kind of threat do we see or any challenges that we can expect in the forthcoming future?
Well, that's a great question, because I think that's something that is on the top of a lot of people's mind. But what I want to say is, look, if you look at where, and we've also had this conversation with TomTom multiple times. Obviously, we have a great relationship there, and have a transparent conversation with them on their business, and we tie into their strategy. The two things are happening. While Google Maps does provide a consumer option, from a commercial perspective, the TomTom algorithm and the data is significantly more accurate than Google Maps. So, for example, TomTom's one, I think their largest customer is either FedEx or UPS. For FedEx or UPS, where their business depends on the quality of data, it is quite a value add that TomTom provides to them. That is the accuracy of data, the accuracy of traffic, and the algorithm to get from point A to point B, including driver scheduling, how do they go from address A to B to C, all that. So that's one aspect. So they do have a significant value proposition. Again, as a consumer, you know, your 5 minutes to say that say you can still live with it. FedEx and UPS, those 5 minutes keeps adding up, and you know, it goes into the hundreds of millions of dollars that there's an impact. So that's one aspect. The second aspect is, if you look at maps historically have been two-dimensional, two-dimensional, relatively accurate information. Whereas today, with things like autonomous driving, highly automated driving, all those things coming in, they can't just be two-dimensional, they have to be three-dimensional. They also have to be not just relatively accurate, but even in an absolute sense. It's a technicality, but it's quite important on creating a database that shows absolute location of things rather than just relative location. Also, look at the quality of data. That is, you just don't need to, earlier, as long as you knew that there was a road, it was okay. Then as long as you knew that there were three lanes, it was okay. Today, you need to know exactly how wide the lane is at each point, because, you know, for automated driving, that becomes quite important. Mm-hmm. So actually, if you look at it, all of a sudden, TomTom's business has come back very strongly because of the second aspect. The first aspect is what let them survive, that is, commercially, they had an absolutely fantastic product that let them survive. But now with these new technologies that require, not just X, Y, also Z, and even W, I think is the third dimension or fourth dimension on width and so on and so forth, that's created the a huge opportunity for them.
Thank you. We will take the next question from the line of Moiz Tambawala from Foreign Tree Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, everyone. A couple of questions. One on the newly opened tower operation center. If you can speak a little bit about the revenue model, what exactly is it that we do here, and whether this would be substantial based business. And the next question is on the subcontracting that we do. We have mentioned that this is a lot of large data collection people that we have there. And now that we have the LPIS IP solution that possibly automates a lot of it, so is there going to be any structural change in this sort of work that we do?
Sure. So on the first one, the tower operation center, the model is really an outcome-based model. That is, we help our customers manage towers, and basis the outcome of how they're being managed, we get paid. So it's an interesting model because it's not anymore just a sort of, how many bodies are you going to put in front of a center. It's quite interesting because it has many elements to it. Obviously, there is the softential element because there's the operations center that needs to be managed. But also there's a DLM element to it because the towers per se today are dumb construction sites, right? There's just a tower. So we're also rejigging these towers with sensors, with an ability to communicate, with all that stuff. So it's, you put these sensors and various kits, electronic kits there to capture the data. Then the IoT lets you transmit the data. So, and then ultimately the analytics piece, which is our analytics business, helps you analyze the data. So one of the interesting thing on the TOC is that it brings a lot of elements of our business and a lot of the acquisitions together to come up with a solution, which can also be monetized in a very unique manner. In the second question on LPIS, it does change some of the dynamics, but I'd say we're also, honestly, sometimes we jump in front of ourselves in terms of, how quickly a technology will be adopted. LPIS can help that with the collection of data over a period of time. And one of the deals that we won is, is going to help us to do that. But, some of the subcontracting work that we do is even more elementary today. It's really around the physical asset around the network rather than the network itself. So it will happen, but I wouldn't write off the current business model at least for a few years. I think the great thing for us at least is that we're doing these things that will really give the large volumes 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But at the same time, the current business won't go away in a hurry.
Great. And lastly, if you can sort of indicate what are sort of revenues that you're expecting from the tower operation center and margins, if at all you can?
It's too early for that. I think we're still, the operation center has been created. So we're now in the business cycle. I would take some time to answer that.
So, all right. Thank you. That answers the questions.
Thank you very much. That was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal for closing comments.
Thanks to everyone for participating in the call. I will hand over the call now to Ajay. Over to Ajay. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. As Krishna said, we have delivered a very strong year, financial year 18, and we all look forward to a very strong year, financial year 19. And thanks for all your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Edelweiss Securities, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.